yet much of their activity purports to be missionary. Instead of British church people and Bible societies accompanying Queen Victoria's soldiers to India, we have U.S. missionaries following the flag to the Middle East. Prior to World War II, the mainline U.S. churches led missionary work, but today, says historian Paul Harvey, American foreign mission efforts are dominated by conservative evangelical groups, the Southern Baptist Convention and the Assemblies of God. The largest Pentecostal denomination are the two largest senders of career missionaries, and Mormons, by far the largest sender of non-career missionaries. Indeed, after the prophecy wave of the early 1990s, the Southern Baptist Convention and other evangelicals reorganized their missionary activity to focus on Islam in the Middle East and North Africa. And in 2003, the New York Times reported that the number of U.S. missionaries in Islamic countries had doubled since 1990. By 2003, after a decade-long drumbeat by religious organizations urging the United States to defend foreign Christian populations, another page taken from British 19th-century experience, the principal evangelical churches were not just war supporters, but active mission planners. A year after the military took Baghdad, a survey by the Los Angeles Times found 30 evangelical missions in the city. Kyle Fisk, executive administrator of the National Association of Evangelicals, told the newspaper that Iraq will become the center for spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ to Iran, Libya, and throughout the Middle East. John Brady, head of operations of the Southern Baptist Convention International Missions Board in the Middle East and North Africa, said in a fundraising letter that events in Iraq represented a war for souls. Within 2 years, 7 new evangelical Christian churches had been launched in Baghdad alone. Some credited their humanitarian efforts, but the Roman Catholic Archbishop claimed they seduced Christians from other churches, and some Muslims complained about the proselytization. Whatever the effect, many in the Christian right appear to have a larger purpose, perhaps related to preparation for the rapture, the tribulation, and Armageddon. Some 40% of Americans, as we have seen, believe that the Antichrist is alive and already on the earth. Paul Boyer dates evangelical preoccupation with the Middle East back half a century, stirred by the creation of Israel in 1948, then by the recapture of Jerusalem's old city in 1967, and then again by the expansion of Jewish settlements in Gaza and the West Bank, all key end times signs. They further balloon during the years surrounding the Gulf War and the demonizing of Saddam Hussein. Islam's evil role, says Boyer, is an ancient view in Christian eschatology. As Richard the Lionhearted prepared for the Third Crusade in 1190, the famed prophecy interpreter Joachim of Fiore assured him that the Islamic ruler Saladin, who held Jerusalem, was the Antichrist, and that Richard would defeat him and recapture the Holy City. Later, even during World War I, the Ottoman Empire was cast in the Antichrist role, and by the 1970s, fundamentalists were transferring that evil to the Arab world. Anticipating George W. Bush, Boyer adds, prophecy writers in the late 20th century also quickly zeroed in on Saddam Hussein. If not the Antichrist himself, they suggested, Saddam could well be a forerunner of the evil one. Prophecy believers found particular significance in Saddam's plan, launched in the 1970s to rebuild Babylon on its ancient ruins. The fabled city on the Euphrates, south of Baghdad, owed its splendor to King Nebuchadnezzar, the same wicked king who warred against Israel and destroyed Jerusalem in 586 BC. Evil Babylon, the antithesis of Jerusalem, the good city, prompted its own literature in the 1990s. And LaHaye's tens of millions of readers praised his series as making the Bible and its supposed predictions come alive. Like Boyer and other critics of LaHaye, I cannot help but think that by the early 2000s, certainly by September 11th, the Left Behind series provided an extraordinary context for a president with a religious mission. Its biblical framework already bundled together the terrorism of September 11th, the oil politics of the Persian Gulf, oil itself being, in the LaHaye books, a strategic calculus of the Antichrist, it could not be a White House focus, and the invasion of Iraq come Babylon. The distinctions that mattered to secular Americans, that Saddam was not involved in the September 11th attacks and that the weapons of mass destruction excuse for invading Iraq was specious, would have mattered less to the tens of millions of true believers viewing events through a left-behind perspective. They simply embraced Bush's broad good versus evil explanation. Ultimately, polling projects have suggested that Bush backers were uniquely muddled in their perceptions. One special survey undertaken by the Center for International and Security Studies at the University of Maryland found 3/4 of Bush backers still convinced in autumn 2004 that Iraq did have weapons of mass destruction or a development program and was also aiding al-Qaeda despite well-publicized official reports to the contrary. As part of their worldview, these people simply refused to disbelieve Bush's original weaponry assurances or implications. A case of cognitive dissonance. Unfortunately, the international consequence of U.S. misjudgment in the Middle East, from the loss of American prestige and rising oil prices to occupied Iraq's role in breeding, not relieving, Islamic terrorism, could not be so easily ignored. The military casualties and the budgetary deficit effects of the imbroglio in Iraq rose together. And if the disarray was far short of anything in World War I, some of the message was similar. As in Britain, nearly a century earlier, evangelical religion, biblically stirred foreign policy, and a crusader mentality ill-fitted a great power decreasingly able to bear the rising economic costs of strategic and energy supply failure. If anything, the United States of the early 2000s, for all that it lacked Britain's established church, was under George W. Bush in the grip of a considerably more powerful religiosity, constituency pressure, and biblical worldview.